Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Later fake the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, we'll take a look back at the final Howl on Wheels Roadshow. We were in Fayetteville this past week. Some good information coming out of that. Had a great crowd there. But we do want to welcome in right now our special guest from A-State Football, offensive coordinator going into year six as the OC at A-State. It's our buddy Keith Heckendorf.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Does it feel that long? 6 years?
You know, not on a daily basis, but I got a picture on my desk of when we moved here and my boys were 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And now they're 7 going on 8 this fall. And it's like, man, where did that go? Where did that time go?
I am a big fan of you. I'm a big fan of your family. Mia, your wife, fantastic, and your twin boys, Ethan and Elliot, and for them to grow up here, this is all they know, really, is
this is home. This is home for them. This is home for them. You know, they were two when we left North Carolina, so they don't really remember a whole lot of that, but they've gone to their first schools here. They've made their first friends here. They'll truly remember our neighborhood here and all the kids in our neighborhood that they're out playing with every afternoon. So, yeah, for them, this will be a place that they'll always look back and remember as a huge part of their life, for sure.
Who had twins in their family?
Both sides.
Really?
My dad was a twin, a boy and a girl. And her granddad was a twin, a boy and a girl. So, yeah, were we surprised by the twins? Probably a little bit, but not shocked, right? My wife was probably more shocked when they said baby A was a boy. She's like, okay. When they said baby B was also a boy, she's like, oh, what did I get myself into here? Because she was the oldest of three girls. So she'd never been around boys. And I was the oldest of three boys, so something had to give.
We want to get into football, and there's a lot of exciting stuff going on there, but this is your first time in on this podcast, so I want to go back and kind of hear your story a little bit, and your hometown is Molony, Wisconsin, right? Is that how you say it?
Mosony.
Mosony, I'm
Mosony,
sorry.
Yep.
Mosony,
that's even
Wisconsin.
What you had written.
Well, and I didn't even look at it. Mosony, Wisconsin. All right, so tell me about growing up there. Tell me about your family a little bit.
Well, it's small town, central Wisconsin. My parents were both teachers. And what's interesting is teachers and coaches. And we lived in one district. And my dad drove 20 minutes one direction. And he was a head eighth grade football coach for 36 years and taught junior high PE and health. My mom went the complete opposite direction to another district. And she was a high school PE teacher and track coach. And we lived right in the middle. So we followed three different sports teams growing up.
Huh.
All three different divisions. Dad's school was really big. We were kind of right in the middle, and my mom's school was really small. Three boys. I was the oldest of three boys. I was telling somebody this the other day on a recruiting visit, and the hockey game was on. The Stanley Cup Finals were on, and I said, yeah, man, I played hockey in high school. And really growing up, I came home from kindergarten one day. They passed out a slip of paper for every kid in class that if you wanted to sign up for hockey, here's hockey sign up. I mean, Mosony's a town of about just under 4,000 people, so it's not very big. But we got our own hockey facility. We got our own hockey team from every age level up. And I'll never forget the first day we had practice. My parents were like, yeah, you can try it. We got no problem with that. We had to have the neighbor boy come over and show us how to put all the equipment on. We had no idea. And then I played from kindergarten all the way through high school. My two younger brothers also played. We were a sports family. Football in the fall. Hockey in the wintertime, and typically it was baseball or track in the spring. Mom had us in the fall after school, would take us to all Dad's football games. Dad had us in the spring, would take us to all Mom's track meets. So we've been around sports our whole life, and that's kind of where I got started. And I ended up going to St. Cloud State, got a degree in education. Honestly, never saw myself going back and teaching in the high schools, but I knew I wanted to coach.
Yeah.
And now I look back on it and I find myself using that education degree to teach. I just get to teach quarterback play. I get to teach offensive football. So it's interesting how life kind of comes full circle with what you go to school for and what you end up using it for. Maybe not the intent originally, but I find myself drawing back on that all the time.
So for a long time, in anticipation of when we'd get you in here and do this, I was all prepared to say the best hockey player we've ever had on the podcast. But now, I don't know, because
Mike Silva,
our new head baseball coach, grew up a hockey player. Now I'm going to have to go back and check tape. Yeah.
Where at?
In Massachusetts.
Okay. They got pretty good hockey up there.
So now you guys are going to send in some clips, and we're going to have to grade this thing out.
We're going to have to dig up the VHS tape. I was going through my garage a couple weeks ago, and I actually found some of my St. Cloud State highlights and game film all on VHS tape. So if you know somebody that can transfer it over to a, I guess, digitally, now we skipped the DVD generation here and go right to the digital. So I got it. I may need to get hooked up on that.
Well, when did you figure out that football was your thing, though? I mean, obviously you're playing all these other sports. When did you realize that was your gift?
You know, it's interesting. You know, my dad was a coach. He played receiver in college, and that was kind of always his position. Both of my younger brothers ended up playing receiver, but for some reason, I always gravitated towards the quarterback position. Early on, I kind of always had a passion for it. My dad played at Wisconsin Lacrosse, Division III school. He would go work their camp. They had invited him to go work their camp every year. About fifth or sixth grade, I started begging him to let me come. And in sixth grade, they said, yeah, well, you can bring him up. So from sixth grade on, and it was a high school camp, I went. I'd be there the whole week with my dad, and I loved it. We'd stay in the dorms. It was the old school camps, you know, where you'd stay overnight and eat the cafeteria food and all that good stuff. Nowadays, it's all the one-day camps. But I just had a passion for it, and if there was a camp going on, I wanted to go to it. If my dad was working a camp, I wanted to be at it. If it was a small high school camp, I wanted to go to it. And I kind of felt that passion for that game early. And what's interesting is we got three boys. All three of us played the same sports, but my passion was really football. My middle brother, his passion really was baseball. And the youngest one, even though he played in the NFL for a little bit, his passion was hockey. I mean, he was a phenomenal hockey player and loved it. So it's interesting how you have three boys in the same house, grow up all playing the same sports, but where your passions become a little bit different. So I kind of find that with my kids now that you got twin boys born obviously the same day. Their cribs were right next to each other. Their beds were right next to each other. My parents, my wife dressed them the exact same for as long as she could, about five. Then they started fighting around that. But how different they are. Well, how different their personalities are and their love for sports. But early on, I knew football was what I wanted to do.
You mentioned going to St. Cloud State. You didn't include the fact that you had a really, really good career there. In fact, you were a finalist for the Harlan Hill Trophy, which I guess is the equivalent to the Heisman on the D2 level.
Yep.
A finalist a couple of times for that award. So you mentioned the desire, what your parents did, coaching. I mean, even while you were doing all that as a player, is your mindset, hey, I want to go straight into coaching after this?
Well, I think as a player, you always have that goal and that dream and that passion of playing as long as possible. My junior year, we had a really good team. We had a really good football team. We tied for the conference championship that year, and I can say I'm really proud of that because when I came in my freshman year, we redshirted almost our entire class. And the next year, I think we went 2-10. As freshmen. Now, there was like nine of us freshmen that started as redshirt freshmen. So that same group grew together. I think we won two games the first year. We won four games the second year. And then the third year, we were like 9-2 and tied for the conference championship. And it was fun just to be a part of that growth process.
Yeah.
But because of that and the success we had on offense, all of a sudden one day I get a phone call about the Harlan Hill Trophy. I never heard of it. I never knew it even existed. And it opened up an opportunity for me. At the time, it was at the University of North Alabama. We go down and they fly you down, tuxedo, the whole deal. I mean, it's like a pretty big event. It's interesting because Brian Kelly was the head coach at Grand Valley State at the time, and his quarterback was up for the award and actually won the award that year. I got to meet him, and it was a great experience, and I was kind of blown away by it, not even realizing that it existed, so you didn't have any pressure your junior year to try to live up to this award or anything. But then going into my senior year, I was kind of like, okay, well, I was third as a junior, and I got to step it up. And I had a pretty good senior year. My numbers were actually better in almost every category. So I went into the ceremony, and there's three guys that get invited. You're up there in front, you're in your tux, you're standing in front of the whole group, and they start to announce who's going to win. So I got my speech ready to go. And when they announced, it's funny, they announced Will Hall, the head coach of Southern Miss. Really? They announced him as the winner. I felt like I got kicked right in the stomach. I was pissed, I'll be honest with you. I was not real happy. So Will wins the award.
Does he still remind you about that?
I remind him. When I saw him before the game last year, I said, hey, have you dusted off my trophy that you got in your office that they gave you on accident? So we've had some good fun with it.
But where was he?
He was at North Alabama. No conspiracy theory.
No, okay, you know what I mean? Yeah.
He was at the school that
say
ran
no
the
more.
Award.
Say but, no more.
We've actually become pretty good friends since. So it's been something we've been able to share. But that experience, being able to do that, I got to go to New York for the National Scholar Athlete Award through the National Football Foundation. Went to New York City. Had never been before. You know, stayed at the Waldorf Astoria. And
wow.
It was the year Barry Sanders was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. I still got my little Oklahoma State helmet that Barry signed at that event. And so some of those experiences I didn't even realize were out there. I mean, I'm a small town Wisconsin boy that I didn't know what all existed out in the world. I thought it was cold everywhere in the wintertime, you know what I mean, growing up north. So I go there, and I've got the dream and the passion to play at the next level like every kid. Coming out of my senior year, I was invited down to the Cactus Bowl. It's the All-Star game, the Division II All-Star game. They have it in Kingsville, Texas. And I know that there's a small opportunity, this small window to play. And for some reason, like, something was not right with my shoulder. And like, I knew it. I was struggling to throw. Like, I just had a pain. And I went in and saw the doctor. The doctor's like, oh, everything looks fine. You should be good. So I fight through it. I fight through it through that. I fight through it through the draft process. End up not getting drafted, okay? Still chasing. I go to some CFL workouts. I go to some arena ball workouts. And I went to an arena workout in Chicago. Me and my brother. My brother drove down there with me. And it was an initial workout for the Chicago Rush. And they invited me back for a second workout. So I made the first cut on my way back. I'm driving back from Chicago back home to my parents' house. And I get a call from a former coach at St. Cloud State who had just got hired at Nebraska as a grad assistant. And Bill Callahan was the head coach, first-year head coach at Nebraska.
Yeah.
He's kind of revamping some of their internal operations and how they do things. And he calls me up and says, hey, he goes, we got an offensive quality control job. It's yours right now. But this was like July 20th, and like they're going to start in like a week. I'm on my way back, pumped up about this workout, pumped up about this opportunity in the Arena League. And I sat down with my dad. I called my coach and prayed about it, and I just said, you know what? I've put so much time and effort into chasing my dream, and I got an opportunity now to fulfill it. I can't turn this down. I can't not continue to keep chasing it. So I called my buddy up, or the coach of St. Cloud, and I told him, I can't do it. I said, I got to see this thing through. So that fall, as I'm waiting for the next workout, I'm coaching at the high school. They talked me into helping with the varsity team. I'm subbing in the school. I'm living with my parents and continue to train, continue to work out. I'm just like, something's not right with my shoulder. Well, finally we go in, we get an MRI done. I got torn labrum. End up having surgery on it. Puts an end to my playing days. So they talk me into coaching high school hockey. So I'm the assistant varsity hockey coach at Mosinee High School. And at the time, I knew where my passion was. I wanted to get into college. So I sent my resume to every Division I school in the country, every one of them. And I got a lot of replies back. Yeah, you know, we'll keep it on file. Thanks for your interest. And I got a reply back from my buddy. It was that coach me at St. Cloud, who was at Nebraska. He said, hey, the guy we hired is just not working out. Would you still be interested? I said, absolutely. I said, I'll be there tomorrow. He said, well, give me a little bit. We're going to get you down here. And about 2 weeks later, he calls me and says, hey, would you be willing to come down and interview? I said, yep, I'll be there. So they flew me down. I interviewed. 1 week later, I came back. I packed my truck up, and I drove to Lincoln, Nebraska. And I've been on my coaching path ever since. And what's interesting is I look back on my career, and then that first opportunity I had, if I would have taken that job when they originally offered, they probably would have fired me too. What they asked that position to do with no background or no experience in the coaching world, no experience in the West Coast offense at that time, was next to impossible. So I get hired in February. I got the entire offseason to learn the job. It worked out phenomenal. But I look back on those experiences and I go, you know what? The good Lord has opened some doors and he's closed some doors for a reason for me. And I couldn't always see it at the time. You know, it was right in front of me. But I can look back now and specifically go, you know what? He had a better plan than I had. And he's done that throughout my career. And it's obviously has led me here to Arkansas State.
Yeah, the timing had to be right there.
It had to be right.
I'm going to detour here a second. And I'm going to call on your ability as a talent evaluator, as a recruiter, as a looking, watching a guy's film and knowing if he is the part. In 2024, would Keith Heckendorf have played his senior season at St. Cloud State? If you were coming through today, had the junior year you had, would you have been there for your senior season? Or
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say yes because of the guys. Because we had a lot of guys in that senior class that we had all come in together that were coming back. We lived in Ivy apartments. There was four of us that had an apartment. There was four guys that had the apartment next to us. There was four guys that had the apartment on the floor above us. So there was all of us. We're all kind of right there. And we all did everything together. So to leave that group, I think, would have been really, really hard. And I'll be honest with you, as I look back now, I can look at it through a different lens. Like I look at the time, you think you're great, right? You're like, man, I could play there. I could play at that level. I could play. Now I look at it through the coach's lens and I go, you know what? I probably wasn't as good as I thought I was. Probably didn't have as much arm strength as I thought I did and probably wasn't as fast as I thought I was. But St. Cloud State ended up being a great place for me. And what's crazy is when the guy showed up at my high school, his name was Matt Pulowski, showed up at my high school. I had never heard of St. Cloud State. I just went and talked to the guy because I could get out of class. Right? I mean, okay.
It's a good enough reason.
My coach comes down and says, hey, there's a guy from St. Cloud State. You want to visit with him? Yeah, sure. Fast forward 5 years, it ended up being a great place for me. I met some of my best friends. It opened doors and opportunities to things that I didn't even know existed. And it got my foot in the door to big-time college football. You know, without that connection at St. Cloud, I would not have gotten my foot in the door at Nebraska. I didn't know any of those guys. I sent out a resume to everyone in the country, and I didn't get a job off of any of it. What's crazy is my connection there, his name was Aaron Stamm. So he was a grad assistant at St. Cloud. He coached the D-line, then he coached the tight ends, and I think his last year he coached our running backs. So he'd been around me and seen me kind of grow up in my career. And at the time, he was a young married guy, had his first child. Fast forward to today, this offseason, we actually hired his son as one of our offensive grad assistants.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So it's funny how life can come full circle. Ryland Stamm is his name, and he's done a great job for us so far. But it's interesting just kind of how the connections of life, you never know when those dots are going to connect. They have for me and throughout my career in a lot of different ways.
Kind of a good segue here because you talk about your coaching stops and the timing with those. And I know you spent time at Nebraska and Western Carolina. You were at North Carolina, player development position. That's what you held there from 2011 to 2013. But there's actually a short stint here at A-State in 2014. When Coach Anderson was hired, he brought you in here before North Carolina brought you right back in a bigger role. I know we talk about the last 6 years here, but that short stint here in Jonesboro, did you ever think, hey, I might come back to this place sometime?
Well, it's interesting how things kind of work because, you know, I can take it a step back even further. Is I'm at Nebraska. I take the job at Western Carolina. I was 26 years old. I was the youngest offensive coordinator in the country. I go there and you think you're going to grab the world by the tail and run with it, right? And we weren't very good. We were terrible. And 3 years later, I got fired. And I thought that was the worst thing in the world. Like, I felt like a disappointment to my parents. Me and Mia had just gotten married. We got married in July. I got fired in November. We got a two-bedroom log house on the top of a ridge in the mountains of North Carolina. And I'm going, okay, what do I do next? And what's crazy is I end up taking the job at UNC Chapel Hill as an offensive quality controller, player development role, I guess was the title they had for it back then. And I would have never taken that job had I not gotten let go at Western. So I get hired at North Carolina, and Butch Davis is the head coach at the time. And it was that July that he gets let go. So I get hired in March. He gets let go in July. And me and Mayor are looking at ourselves like, what have we gotten ourselves into? We just moved to North Carolina. Now the head coach gets fired here. So they're going to name an interim head coach. They're either going to name the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator. Well, the offensive coordinator goes to me. He goes, hey, if they make me the head coach, I'm going to make you the quarterback coach. And I'm thinking, this is going to be great. I'm going to go from getting fired at Western Carolina, I'm going to be the quarterback coach at UNC. Well, they hired the defensive coordinator. They elevate him. So the guy in my position on defense bumped up to be the safeties coach. Season comes and goes. They're cleaning house. They're making changes. They hire Larry Fedora from Southern Miss, and he comes in and lets all the full-time coaches go. Well, because I was a quality control guy, they kind of kept me around. I didn't know Coach Fedora or anybody else on staff, and Blake Anderson was the guy they hired as the offensive coordinator. I didn't know Blake from Adam. So I went in, I introduced myself. I said, I'm Keith Heckendorf, offensive quality control. What do you need done? And he's like, well, take this playbook, the Southern Miss playbook, and just change the logos and the colors. And so we got it ready for North Carolina. This was January, so they were out on the road recruiting. So I sat my butt in that offensive staff room for 3 straight weeks. And I drew the entire playbook from scratch on Vizio, changed the format, made it kind of look fancy with the North Carolina logo and colors. And when Coach Anderson got off the road, I said, here you go. I handed it to him. And the whole time I'm there and I'm doing it, there's this guy that keeps walking into the office, kind of checking on me, kind of looking at, what are you doing? Well, his name was Luke Pascal. And I didn't really know who he was. He really never really introduced himself. And yeah. And then fast forward a couple of weeks after the staff gets back, they let the guy on special teams go, and they hire Luke Pascal to be the special teams coordinator. So fast forward 2 more years with Coach Anderson at North Carolina and Coach Fedora. Blake gets the job here at Arkansas State, and he hires Walt Bell to be the offensive coordinator. He hires Luke Pascal to be the receiver coach, and he hires me to be the tight end coach recruiting coordinator. So all three of us get on an airplane to fly to Jonesboro, Arkansas here. And while we're on the plane, we're talking. And Luke, he goes, I got a story to tell you. I said, well, what's that? He goes, did you know that they really hired me originally to come in and be the offensive quality control guy on the staff at North Carolina? And I said, really? He said, no, they decided to keep you and they bumped me over to special teams and I got to stay. And then all three of us came here and I was excited. I was tickled to death and fired up to have a, you know, your first full-time coaching job at a Division I school, and came in and hit the ground running recruiting that winter. And while we're on the road, I talked to one person from North Carolina over that whole month. And his name was Joe Hayden. He was their DFO. And I'm calling him going, hey, Joe, what do we do for official visit for this? What form did I have to get for this? I'm calling him with all these questions about setting up official visits and what I needed to do, because it was a new role for me. It was 100 miles an hour. And it was the Monday before signing day. We're sitting in the office and my phone rings, and it was Chris Kapilovic, the O-line coach at North Carolina. And he goes, hey, you got a minute to talk? I said, yeah. He goes, no, I need to talk. I said, yeah, let me call you back when I get out of here. So I called him back and he kind of explained what was going on there. And they hired a guy named Seth Luttrell, who at the time was coming from Indiana to be the offensive coordinator. Well, Seth played at Oklahoma. He was a fullback on their Coach Stoops' national championship team. So his background was tight ends, running backs, fullbacks. Well, he didn't want to really coach the quarterbacks. So they hired him to be the coordinator, and he was going to coach the tight ends. And then they said, well, let's go find a quarterback coach. And so that's how my name got brought back up, and in turn, how I ended up back at UNC. And it was hard. It was hard to leave. But at the same time, I had the relationships with all those kids. I'm at North Carolina, and I knew what that room looked like. My wife hadn't moved yet. And everybody can relate to this in Arkansas because of the weather, right? And the weather in January, February, you're due for a good ice storm, right? It's signing day. I have a lease in my hand of an apartment or a house that me and Mia are going to lease here in Arkansas. Ice storm comes. I can't get out. Like I literally can't get out the driveway to get my lease turned in, and I'm offered the job. So the good Lord had a plan, and I couldn't see it. He could see it, and he kind of guided and directed things that you go back and left on good terms. But then you fast forward 5 years, And to be able to come back as the offensive coordinator is kind of ironic.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars.
Bring a vehicle, get a check.
Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T-Club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Continuing to visit with A-State offensive coordinator Keith Heckendorf here on the Second to None podcast, brought to you by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. You do come back in 2019, this time as the offensive coordinator. That was a good season. 2019, you win the Camellia Bowl. It was interesting the way it played out because you had a really good young quarterback that started the season and Logan Bonner. He was injured early in the season, though, and you have to start a freshman, Lane Hatcher, the rest of the way. He starts at Troy, and I think his first career touchdown or first career pass was a 92-yard touchdown pass.
Not even first pass, but first play. First play of the game, we get the ball at the minus 2 yard line, and we said, you know what? Let's go. when you got Omar Bayless on the outside and some of the wideouts we had, it was like, hey,
I remember
let's
that
go.
Play.
They ain't going to expect us to throw it deep. And I tell our guys this all the time. You can't throw a 98-yard touchdown if you're not willing to throw it from the minus two.
That was an amazing start to Lane's time at Arkansas State. But that was a successful season, and then 2020 comes around. And I don't want to spend just a lot of time on this, but I think it's worth mentioning because you had to deal with one of the more unique coaching situations I'm sure that you're ever going to have to deal with. Number one, it's COVID. So you don't know what you're going to have to do from week to week as far as player availability. But you had Logan and Lane, who both showed what they could do the season before, and the decision was made that you guys were going to split up the reps. In fact, you were going to rotate every other series, and it stayed that way the entire season. And both of them put up big numbers, but just how challenging was that? And I can't imagine anything more unique that you've had to go through. Well, on the field-wise.
Obviously, the COVID factor played a big role in that whole thing. But you had two guys that, when they played, they both played and played really well. But in that season, if you think about it, we knew every week you were going to have to test on a Thursday or Friday morning before you boarded the plane or boarded a bus. You never knew who was going to be playing or who wasn't going to be playing. And we felt very fortunate to have two quarterbacks. And as we went into the season, we said, you know what? We got two guys we can win with. So we decided, made the decision to play both of them. And at that point, I sat down with Coach Anderson and I said, I've been in this situation before. At the University of North Carolina, my first year as the quarterback coach, we had a kid named Mitch Trubisky, who redshirted the year before, so he was a redshirt freshman. And we had a kid named Marquise Williams, who had played. He wasn't our starter, but all of a sudden our starter got hurt the year before, and he jumps in and plays like the last six games. And we go from having one win to we make it to a bowl game. So he comes in, and that year they competed for the job. And I think there was the perception out there that, you know, it was just a matter of time before Mitch was the starter and take over. He was highly recruited. So we played both of them. Marquise would go in for the first two series, and then Mitch was always going to play series number three. So we did that for, like, I think the first four games. And I'll be honest, it was a disaster. Because after series two, Marquise is coming out, Mitch is going in. So Mitch has always had the mindset of, okay, I got to go and improve myself right now. I got to make something happen in this series right now so that I can go to the next series. So then after series three, you get two guys coming to the headsets. You get two guys coming to the phones and going, okay, who's next? Who's going in? and you had to make a decision based off of two series.
Mm-hmm.
Well, playing quarterback is a position where there's give and take. You got to be willing to take what they give you. You can't force the issue at times. You got to make decisions based on how the game is flowing. And what would happen is those guys were pressing so hard to make the splash play and make something big happen, because when they came off, they was like, well, I want to go in. I want the next series. So no matter what you said, one was going to be happy and one was going to be disappointed. And there was a constant flow, which I didn't think was great for either of them. So when we went into that 2020 season, I said, you know what, if we're going to do this, let's tell them from the get-go, hey, you're going to play a series, then the other one's going to play. So there was never that negative connotation in the game when they came over of disappointment of, oh, why am I not going in? There was never the pressure of, hey, I have to do something on this series in order to get another opportunity. So you took all the negative out of it. Now, they're both competitors. If you'd ask both of them, probably neither one of them loved it, because as a quarterback, you want to be the guy. But for that team in that situation with COVID, of not knowing who was going to be available, I'll be honest, I don't know if it could have worked out any better. I think we threw 41 touchdowns that year.
Yeah.
And had some phenomenal very few offensive numbers. Too. But both of those guys were able to manage it because they always knew when they were going to be up.
Yeah.
You took the negative connotation of playing two quarterbacks out of it, because there was never the disappointment of, well, why am I not going in?
And it was also like it was never up for interpretation. I mean, there was a time where, and I don't remember which one, but if you came in and all you had to do was kneel on it at the end of the half, that was your series, and the next guy was getting the first trip in the third quarter. So it never wavered off that.
We never wavered, and I think that was the best part of it, is they knew that it was not about pressing to perform on that day. Just play. You're both good enough to play. You're both good enough to lead this team. You're both good enough for us to have success. And just play. And when it's your series, go out there and take what they give you. And they had people around them. You know, we had talent around them that they could lean on.
One more thing on that. Because it was going back and forth, and you're playing at Kansas State, and you get to that game-winning drive. It was Lane's turn.
It was Lane's turn.
But the way both of them were going, hey, you were going to feel confident with either one going out.
Well, they both got to play with Jay Adams that day. So
they did. That helps, don't it? He had a pretty good day. One most A-State fans will never forget, that's for sure.
All right, so Coach Anderson leaves for Utah State after the 2020 season. Coach Jones is hired. He's assembling his coaching staff. What was that first meeting like with him, and what made you say, hey, I want to stick around and work for this guy?
I had kind of crossed paths with him previously. I'd never worked for him, but obviously knew who he was and had a lot of respect for what he had done throughout the coaching profession. And when you're coaching and you're going through a transition like that, you know, part of it, you're looking at, okay, opportunity. You're looking at your family. You're looking at, you know, do we have to move? Do we have to pack up and leave? Do we have to go somewhere? And when Coach Jones presented the opportunity to me to stay here, we felt like that was a no-brainer. We had enjoyed Jonesboro. Our kids had really enjoyed it here. We felt at home here. So when we had the opportunity to stay and had a lot of relationships with guys on the team and players, and early on in my career, I'd have probably told you, how fast can I get to the biggest job with the best title at the biggest school making the most money, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the longer I've been in it and probably having kids has probably changed my perspective on that. And you find more and more you just want to be around good people. You want to be around good people. You want to be in a place that values what you do. You want to be in a place where your wife and kids can enjoy it. You know, I tell people all the time, the football field in Alaska and the football field in Arkansas and North Carolina, it's still 120 yards. Those lines don't change. The meeting rooms are the meeting rooms. You still got the same chalkboards and nowadays the dry erase boards, and all of that part doesn't really change. But the community you live in and the people you're around, like, I can isolate myself. I get so busy during football season and recruiting that I kind of get into a little bit of a cocoon. But my wife and my kids, they got to live it. They got to be out. They're in the churches and they're in the schools and they're out at the Little League games now. And so for them to be very comfortable here and for them to really enjoy it here, it made it an easy decision for me to stay here. And then obviously the opportunity and the vision that Coach Jones had in terms of taking this program to another level. And I think what people didn't see in those early years when we may have struggled on the wins and loss columns was all the things that were changing behind the scenes that were advancing Arkansas State football forward. And now you're in recruiting battles with people and you're going head to head with other schools and you look at all the things that we have in place that we can sell and that we can promote. It's making a huge difference now that people weren't able to see immediately because of the wins and losses.
It's not been the fast road, maybe, but you got to appreciate the vision that Coach Jones had coming in, because he made a commitment as soon as he came in. He was going to rebuild this thing through the high school ranks. He wanted to rebuild it with, obviously, the type of talent that we now see on the field with three straight number one recruiting classes. But man, we got a bunch of good guys in the program. I think the character on this team is as high as it has been.
The more you coach somewhere, the more invested you get into the people. And I walk into that offensive staff room every day. I can look at Andy Kwan. I can look at Nick Grimes. I can look at Derek Lett and Coach Lovings. And we got a great group in there. And then I look at our support staff in there with our GAs. You know, Coach Jones' son Alex is in there. We got Hunter Todd is in there. And those guys make it a joy to be in that room every day. Like, I feel like we've got a really good staff. And then you look at just the overall players on offense. Like, I walk into the offensive team room and when we meet and I look out at the group and I go, man, good dude, good dude. I'd go to war with that guy. You look around and it makes you want to continue to invest in them because they're giving you everything they got. And they're good kids. They try hard. They do what's asked. When you coach guys that are they're doing the right things in the classroom and they're doing the right things in the community, and then you push them on the field and they're willing to take your coaching and they're willing to let you push them to challenge them to see how good they can be, that's what makes it fun. And I think that's what's exciting about this upcoming season is we've got a lot of guys in the program that have been here and that have gone through the growing pains, but they see how much better they're getting. And they trust the process that Coach Jones has in place and that we have in place as an offense to help these guys grow and develop. So it's fun just to kind of see it continue to grow, continue to build. Coach talked to Jeff Foreman recently about his experience now with the Raiders. And I think Jeff is a great example of some of the things that the average fan may not see that our guys are doing. It's making a huge difference for a guy like that when he gets an opportunity in the NFL. And we're trying to create value for them, not only in the short term to win games at Arkansas State, but we're also trying to create value for them on what they can do beyond Arkansas State, what they can do down the road, what they can do with opportunities in the NFL or the CFL or a lot of these same things that we're teaching them, they're going to carry over to what they can do in life. And whether it's a business, it's whatever they can get into, they're going to be able to draw back on their experiences and the things they've learned because they've been a part of this football program. And I think when you can say that, it makes your job really rewarding.
Less than a year ago, we're at a preseason function. I can tell you where we're standing. We're standing in the weight room, and I asked you, I said, all right, is this freshman really going to be allowed to win the job? Because, I mean, it wouldn't have been a big surprise if you said, all right, realistically, this kid, no matter what, this kid's not going to be the quarterback because we're going to develop him. I said, can Jalen actually be allowed to win the job? You said, yes, he can win it. And at the time, the next part was not surprising because you said, right now he's got the highest peaks and the lowest valleys. That comes with youth. When did you know that either he shrunk the space between those peaks and valleys or you knew it was time to go with the youngster?
Well, he did some things in spring ball coming in where he was just like, wow, he just do that? And then he makes his growing pains, right? And you go through the summer months, and we obviously brought the transfer in JT, and Jackson was there. And you get into training camp, and it was just like, where I specifically remember it is we put him in some two-minute drills. And it was like every time we put him in 2 minute and we started playing fast, it was like boom, 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 touchdown. I was like, okay, man, that was pretty good. And then, you know, a couple of days later, we had a two-minute drill again, and coach was like, hey, let's put him in there. So we put him in there, and all of a sudden he'll scramble and make a wild play. And it's like, okay. And then we get in a scrimmage, and we'd run just a base play in the offense. And I was like, how did he miss that? You know what I mean? How did he miss that one? He makes all these spectacular plays, but how did he miss that one? But to Jalen's credit, one of the things that we always talk about with our quarterbacks, and we talk about in recruiting, we talk about don't wait for your opportunity to get ready. Get ready for your opportunity. Because at some point for every guy, an opportunity comes where they get a chance to go out there and play. If you think about it, there's a lot of them when they get that opportunity, they're not ready for it. And that opportunity, that window opens and closes. And that was always my message to the quarterbacks. And it, honestly, it's kind of the approach I try to use when I coach them. If I walk into a room for a quarterback meeting and there's four quarterbacks sitting in there, I'm going to fire out questions at every one of them. I want every guy in that room to be on the edge of their seat. I don't care if you're the starter. I don't care if you're the backup. I don't care if you're a freshman walk-on. I want them all to be on edge about, okay, I got to be locked in. I got to be learning. I got to be growing. Because you never know when it's going to change. I mean, I've been out here at Arkansas State, so 5 seasons. In 5 seasons, we've never played one quarterback the entire year. Not once. So it's always about not only the guy that's your starter, but it's also always about how are you getting the next guys ready to protect your football team. And that's kind of always been my mindset, and Jalen bought into that. So week one, he's number three. But he took an approach to week one like as if he was starting against Oklahoma because he was in there studying the tape. He was in there going through all the things we ask our quarterbacks to do to prepare for a game. Week two, he did the exact same thing for Memphis. And then week three, we went in and said, okay, we got a specific package for Jalen going into this game. Let's find a way to get this kid in the game and get him an opportunity to get some experience and show what he can do. In the third quarter of that game, I think he was a third down play. We had a third down package play for him, and he goes in, he pulls it, and first down, and then touchdown. Coach is like, let's go again. And we go, touchdown. And obviously the rest of the season is history.
Freshman of the year.
But he is a great example of that in terms of a guy that just kept working, kept getting better, kept following the process. Very similar to what Lane did his freshman year. Because he wasn't the starter week one. He wasn't the starter week two, week three. Yeah. And all of a sudden week four, he starts and he's ready. And it goes on to be the freshman of the year in the conference.
One thing you haven't had, though, until now, is a true dual-threat quarterback. And, look, Arkansas State fans saw it before you got here with guys like Ryan Applin and Freddie Knighton and Justice Hansen. They were all dual-threat guys. You finally have that now with Jalen. I can't imagine how much that helps you as a play caller.
It definitely opens up a lot of different things. It forces defenses to play you differently. It's another element for them to have to worry about. If you bring Coach Harley in here, he's going to tell you, you get a quarterback that can run, it's going to make him nervous. It's going to make him nervous all week. When you add that element to the offense, it's one more thing that they have to defend. It does make it tough. You look at the history of Arkansas State, you look at the history of college football, and a lot of teams have had success with guys that are able to use their feet. And that doesn't mean they got to run it 30 times a game. But if he can pull it for 2 to 3 first downs to keep a drive alive, pull it 1 or 2 times in the low red zone and score a touchdown, I mean, those are game-changing plays that over the course of a season make a huge difference.
So I understand. Like, I get it in this day and age. Recruiting's changed with the portal. There's a quarterback in every class. I understand how you go get the high school stud. The one where I got to hear, like, how'd y'all do that, is at a team that had the freshman of the year and signed an ESPN 300 guy. How then did you go get a Timmy McClain to come and jump in that quarterback room?
Well, I think, one, when you go out and you talk to guys, you want to find out what motivates them. Why? Why are they in the portal? What are they looking for? And for us, as much as I love Jalen Rayner, we were 6-7 last year. We weren't above 500 when it's all said and done. So that's not our goal. Our goal is not just to go to a bowl game, and we're not satisfied. So the only way to continue to elevate is to continue to add pieces to your roster. Mm-hmm. And quarterback is no different. And in today's world of recruiting quarterbacks, you start off with, you look at last year's team, we had 4 quarterbacks on scholarship. You had a senior that had 2 years of eligibility left in JT. You had Jackson Daly, who was a redshirt freshman. And then you had 2 true freshmen. So technically, all 4 of those guys could have been back for this season. And then when Jalen plays and has the success he does, you go from 4 quarterbacks to 1 quarterback of last year's team. So, like, your recruiting completely changed.
Yeah.
Obviously, we signed Josh Flowers out of high school, and he comes in, and we knew we could not go into a season with 2 scholarship quarterbacks, and really knew we needed to bring in somebody as a veteran to come in and add depth and add competition to the room. And honestly, that was our approach with Timmy the entire time, is, and just being straightforward, being open, being honest with them. And I told him, Jalen's a good player. But if you just turn on the tape and you watch, there's a lot of opportunities that we missed last season, whether it be at the quarterback spot, whether it be at spots all across our team, all across our offense, or where we could have been better. And I said, here's my pledge to you is you come in here and I'm going to give you every opportunity to compete. And we're going to play the best guy. We're going to roll out the ball and the best guy's going to play. And I pulled Jalen in and I told him the same thing. I said, Jalen, look around right now. I said, how many quarterbacks are in this room? He goes, two. I said, what happens if you twist your ankle? Just walking down the street, what if you twist your ankle? What happens to our football team? I said, so I'm not recruiting somebody with the mindset of, hey, you're not good enough. No, I'm recruiting somebody with the mindset of, I want to bring somebody in there that's going to challenge you. And if you're good enough to beat them out, then you're a better quarterback and we're a better football team. But if you don't do your job and you're not a year better and the guy comes in here to beat you out, guess what? If somebody can come in here and beat you out, then we're a better football team because we got a better quarterback. And he embraced that aspect of it, and I appreciate that about Jalen is he understands the big picture of it. One, he's confident enough in himself, and two, he understands that it's not just about Jalen, it's about our football team. And recruiting Timmy, we basically sold him on the opportunity of, you can come in here and compete. Come in here and compete for the job. We're not going to promise you anything. We got a good football team. We got a lot of pieces around you, but here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to develop you. And all the things that have been happening behind the scenes that Coach Jones has been putting in place, from our nutrition, from our strength and conditioning, from different elements within the building and opportunities within the community, and how we coach the quarterbacks and the relationships with people in the profession, the Mannings, the Grudens of the world, the guys that he's had on his staffs in the past, Matt LaFleur, the Packers, and all those different people, all of a sudden Timmy's looking around going, man, this place has got a lot of things that I didn't realize they had. And then you look at the facilities and you go, man, this place is pretty big time. And then you look at the opportunity, you go, man, they got one quarterback. I'm going to come in here. And part of quarterback competition is about reps. It's about opportunities. And I appreciate Timmy because he's come in here and he's had the approach of, how can I be a great teammate first and just get me around the guys? Let me work. Let me work. Let me learn the playbook. Let me go out there and compete every day. And it's been fun to see him continue to grow and see him and Jalen battle back and forth because it's making both of them better, which in turn makes our football team better.
We can sit here all day and talk about positions and all the talent you have on this roster, but this offense is in a good spot right now, it seems. The offensive line is bigger and stronger than it's been in any time since you've been here. You've got some established running backs coming back. A lot of those receivers are coming back, but you got some new weapons too that I know you got to be excited about. And, you know, Reginald Harden and Malik Hornsby come to mind. And there's another weapon that I know you got to be excited to toy with and see what you can do with him. But just overall, the feeling going in to this season has to be really, really good.
We're excited. One, when you have experience back, that's a great place to start. But what I'll say is, if you look across college football and you look at where our success is going to happen, you look at our top 11 on offense and defense and you feel really, really good. But it's always about the next man up. And I think that's the constant mindset that we have as coaches and that Coach Jones instills in the program is you're always recruiting. You're always recruiting the next guy. You're trying to create depth. You're trying to create competition. You're continuing to elevate the entire roster. And you look at the running back room. And you got Cross, you got Wallace, you got Hawkins, you got three guys that all three of them are good players, but they all compete with each other. They all make each other better. They all complement each other. And that creates the depth that you need to have to be able to sustain, to have the kind of success you want for a season. But yeah, we are fired up. I mean, we are excited. And I think it starts with the players. And I say that because they make it go. You got good players, you got a lot better chance of being a good coach. That's what it's all about. It's about the people you're able to play with because they make it come alive. And when you have a group of guys that have bought into a common goal, they have a work ethic like our guys have, and they have a care factor and a connection. Coach Jones talks a lot about connection. That's one of the things that's part of our team DNA. And I feel like we've got a very connected group, but that's something that you've got to foster every day. But when you see the older guys take the younger guys under their wing, and we have a big brother program where our older guys are helping our younger guys understand the culture and what we're building and what we're doing and what the expectations are, and you see the guys hanging out outside of football, you know, you got something special that's building. And it's part of the growth of a program that I think Coach has had a vision for, that you fight for every day, that you work on building every day. But it starts with people, and it starts with our players. And we've got a great group of players that have bought into what we're doing. They've got an unbelievable work ethic, and I think they're really hungry, and I think they're really excited. I think that goes a long ways.
This has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you coming in.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. I think this is my first podcast.
The thing is, we've gone a good while on this, almost an hour, but we could probably go another one if we wanted to. But
it's been fun.
You're welcome back anytime.
I appreciate it.
Keith Eckendorf joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We'll wrap things up right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours. Welcome home, First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T. Club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group, where you can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Well, we wrapped up the Howl on Wheels Roadshow last week in Fayetteville. Had a really nice crowd out there. It had been a few weeks since we had done one of these events. So for me, you know, it had been a couple of weeks since I'd seen Coach Jones and Coach Hodson and Coach Rogers. And, you know, a few things have happened since then. With football, the players are on campus. They're going through their player-run practices, doing some camps. I don't know if you'd heard about this, but there's a pretty special guest coming to preseason camp. And Coach Eckendorf kind of referenced him during our visit with him. John Gruden is going to be coming to Jonesboro for a few days. I know we talk a lot about just everybody Coach Jones knows in the football world, but for a guy like John Gruden to come in for 4 or 5 days, man, that's got to go a long way.
Pretty cool. Obviously, a guy well-known and well-connected. I'm sure he's probably going to, my guess is he'll come in and his first piece of advice will be our play calls aren't long enough.
Well, him and Coach Heck can figure that part out. Was visiting with Coach Hodson as well, and he's really excited about his group. We knew he would be, but practices have been going well. I asked about the freshmen. He said they're doing great. Was really bragging both to the crowd there in Fayetteville and after the program when we were visiting about Justin Johnson, who was part of that top recruiting class in the Sun Belt Conference. And you look at all the transfers and everything, but pretty neat, these high school recruits, the highest ranked recruits coming out of high school in program history. So Justin Johnson, Arshon King, Josh Hill, I think all of our fans are kind of waiting to see who's going to make an impact right away.
There's a couple different kind of things at play. Number one, we know how Coach Hodson is as a recruiter. That's proven to be the case. You combine that with the era we're in the portal, I think it puts some high school guys in play that might not have been in play at certain places before. I think the high school level. So when you combine the fact that different high school talent is available to you and you got a guy really good at going and getting it, that's a good combination. And we've seen that with this freshman class sprinkled in with these transfers. And it is this perfect storm because you got enough of the core of that group back and the key contributors of that group back to be excited. You got transfer guys added to it to be excited about. You got freshmen added to it to be excited about. So being across the board in every possible way, there's something to be fired up about with that basketball team.
Speaking of fired up, Coach Dez was fired up. They started practice this past week, and she admitted, hey, I don't know what to expect going into that first practice with all the new players they brought in. And She said at the end of that first workout, she left smiling and just loved the energy. She loved the attitude, and she loved the shot making in there because, according to her, really impressive the number of shots that were going down. So it was good to see her as excited as she was.
I actually saw their staff a little bit today, and I mean, I saw the rest of that staff, honestly, without Coach Dez, and they were all kind of saying the same thing. It would have been exciting. You know, and they said, look, it's the first week and energy's high, so you're not coaching effort. Everybody's excited to be there. And, you know, one of the coaches said, you know, out of the 12 kids we got right now, I think 9 of them can make you a shot in terms of, like, the ability to pull up and hit a three and you'd be okay with it. So she might not have known how that was all going to mesh together. Guess who else didn't know? Everybody else, despite thoughts to the contrary. We've learned before in the past, and my example of this is – the textbook case is always Devin Carter. How about you don't get too hung up on the numbers a kid put up somewhere else?
Yeah, Devin Carter, what was it, 1 point he averaged at Kent State?
1.9 points.
And they turned into an all-conference player.
So I don't care what's the best. And by the way, there's probably as many examples of somebody putting up big numbers at places and not translating. So there's just, they didn't recruit him off their stat sheet. They recruited him off the film or what they saw. I mean, there's a reason. And I'm excited to see kind of it's, I mean, obviously it's a big chemistry experiment, right? Because they had to bring so many in. So anxious to see what that looks like.
You mentioned the coaching staff and talking with them, and there are some changes there. Rudy Evans, you can't help but like that guy and the energy he brings. He's going into his second year with the program. It was announced last week that he was elevated to associate head coach status. And then another announcement last week, the hire of Colton Crowder. And he comes from a very well-known basketball family in the state. His mom, Carla, was a basketball
Hall of Famer,
coaching legend. Yeah. And 38-year head coach, the last 16 of which was at Cabot.
Yeah, she's a legend, and you know this young man had no choice but to grow up in it. And I actually heard him talking earlier today. Said, you know, somebody asked him, "Did your mom want you to go in this?" And he said, "She wanted me to go into anything but this." It was almost like I was thinking, "Mamas don't let your babies grow up to be coaches," is what it sounded like. But he's been around it his whole life in this state. You know, he's already been a part of the staff at Arkansas and Little Rock at different functions. He's coached at the high school level. So, yeah, excited to see them get back to a full staff, bringing him in. And, you know, had two other sports make coaching hires, too. A new assistant's announced this week in volleyball and soccer, too.
Yeah, I saw where Jason Gibbs was announced as the new assistant in volleyball. Who did we add on the soccer
side? A young man named Callum Langdale coming in. Now, he's taken the spot that was occupied by Megan McClure, who went back home to not coach. She went back to St. Louis. So no pressure, just following, you know, one of the GOATs in the history of the program there. But Coach Dooley, I can't say enough about what he's done with that program.
No, completely turned it around.
And we're being honest, and I told him this, you know, we're better at soccer than I ever thought Arkansas State would be. I don't know if I ever thought there'd be a day where we were winning conference championships and contending for conference championships and making back-to-back Sun Belt finals in soccer. And I know this number will continue to grow as the sport does, but there are so few players in that circle you draw around, kind of your home base. So the job they've done is great, and that's with a revolving bit, you know, kind of changing cast of characters on his staff as people come and go. So I have no doubt that this will be a good addition to the staff, and they'll continue to do good work.
You mentioned volleyball and a couple of more changes there. Jordan Coombs, who's already been on staff for Coach Gerwig, she's been promoted to recruiting coordinator. And the schedule's out.
Yep,
and
both of those schedules.
We mentioned the soccer last week on this podcast, but the volleyball schedule since then has come out. And
oh, we did kind of tease that a little bit.
You did.
Yeah.
You said it open up at home, and that is indeed the case. The A-State Invitational will be August 30th and 31st. It's going to be a really big weekend on campus. So Friday, you've got a game against SEMO to open up the season, and then that night, taking on Ole Miss on the Friday night, and then at 2 o'clock on Saturday, they'll take on St. Louis, and that will kind of get you ready for the football game that night against UCA.
There'll be some other stuff around those matches. that you'll hear about in the coming days and weeks, different promotional things around that. Hopefully it's just a big weekend both of those days. Good to have an SEC team coming in for a regular season match on that Friday night. So if you're listening from outside Northeast Arkansas, just plan on making a weekend of it, Friday and Saturday here. And if you're local, plan on catching some volleyball to go along with football. And I talked with Coach Gerwig for just a couple of minutes last week about some other stuff, enough to know that, man, he likes this roster. He really thinks they've got the talent level where he's wanted to get it.
Yeah.
And he's anxious to get on the floor with this bunch.
How great was that visit with Coach Heck?
Yeah, really good. Just really enjoyed that. And Toby, we were joking before it started. He was like, how long will this last? And we said, well, we'll cut it off when you quit being interesting. And that turned out not to be the case, because it was still interesting.
Well, we said at the end of it, we could have gone another hour. And I mean it. I mean, there was a lot more to get into, and just really, really appreciate him coming in. It's been fun getting to know him over the last going on 6 years now, and just a fantastic person, number one, and love to see the kind of excitement he has going into this season.
Yeah, and like I said, I just appreciate the perspective he brought to some different stuff in that visit.
Yeah.
And it was cool, and I hope people enjoyed it. And if you did, then you'll reach out to other A-State fans and tell them maybe they want to check that out. We're kind of on a heater here. You look at these last three episodes, for sure. I mean, not just these three, but in kind of rapid fire, you know, to be summertime, and then get the new baseball coach in the day after his press conference, to follow that up with the AD, and then a visit like that with Coach Heck. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Anything else we need to talk about? We've covered it all.
I think so, yeah.
It's been a fun episode. Thanks again to Keith Heckendorf for coming in. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.